We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lukumsky coming to you again from Northfield, Minnesota.
And this is Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark coming to you from sunny St. Louis, Missouri, where I serve as pastor at Ascension Lutheran.
And we've got some just really great stuff today. We left people hanging, but we'll get to that in a moment because I do have one more thing I need to share with you. I'm so upset. I don't know, Matt. The people that manipulate our government, the people that are there spending money, influencing our congressmen. So here I found a classic example of this. The CDC, right? The Center for Disease Control.
Yes.
They published the list of the 10 most healthy things you can eat. Did you see that list?
I have not yet seen this list. This is news to me, John. Yeah, tell.
Here's the thing that shows me that somebody's paid these guys off. Number one, there is no bacon on the list.
Oh.
How can that be?
I don't know.
The As CDC we've told
has been
you
manipulated,
previous,
clearly, John.
Highest source of potassium, way more potassium than bananas. But here's the thing that really disturbed me. All 10 were vegetables, Matt.
Is that
all
right?
All 10.
We know vegetables. Who's behind this, John.
Big vegetable, right,
Big
Matt?
Vegetable.
Big vegetable. I tell you what. People, this is the only show you'll be listening to that you get the truth about big vegetable. Trust me, they've threatened us. They've tried to bribe us, but Matt and I will not. We will not bend to their whims.
We're not caving in.
No.
If they we can't have a list, shut us down.
If we have a list of healthy things, believe you me, bacon. If it's not number one, it'll be at least in the top three. Okay.
That would be a legitimate list. That's a list. And right. If Oreos aren't on there, John.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
Ted Drew's ice cream. Ted Drew's, yeah. Oreos. Man. All right. We need to do that. That'll be our next project. We'll put a list of Wrestling with the Basics, 10 things that are healthy to eat.
We should publish that. Yeah. Well, I think that could be a good public service.
And this is biblical because we just read last week that all food is clean, right, Matt?
Yeah, that's what Jesus says.
It just goes in the mouth and into the toilet. So what difference does it make?
All right. That's right. Yeah.
So last week.
What goes into a man does not defile him, right? Yeah.
It's biblical. It's scriptural. All right, CDC, take that. So last week, I felt bad. I hope people realize that, and this I'm not joking, because I know people are struggling, and I know that everyone needs to know that there's a God who loves and cares for them. And last week, we left them wondering, well, how could God care for me? Because in my heart are evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. That kind of leaves you thinking, well, I don't think God would care for me with all of those sins. But we're going to show you today that he does. He really, really does. But before we do that, Matt, if you don't mind, darn it, I just closed my file too. I would like to share with you a little bit about the word understanding, since that was the word of the week. Okay. Because this is not the first time Mark has used the word understanding in the his accounts. In fact, if you go through Mark, it seems like the disciples never understand. Okay.
That's for sure.
In Mark 4, they don't understand the parables. In Mark 6, they don't understand about the loaves. In Mark 8, he simply says they do not perceive or understand. Okay.
Pretty clear.
The one I want to talk about, and I should have had you look this up, but darn it, that's okay. We're going to get to the other stuff. Mark 9, 31 through 32. This is actually a text that people probably have heard recently, because I think this actually came up a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago. For Jesus was teaching his disciples, saying to them, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise. And this is what it says, Matt, but they did not understand the saying and were afraid to ask him. But here's the cool thing I discovered. It's not the same word there. It's not the same word that he uses
different
in all
Greek
these other
word
examples.
That's used.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is the reason. The word he uses in all these other sections, it's a word that implies you really should be able to understand. It's what we had last week, right? He says, you don't understand this because you really should be able to understand this. And the reason you really should be able to understand these things is because this is all law. All this stuff about murder and adultery and coveting, that's all the laws of God. And people, Paul says that this is written on their hearts, right? Romans 2:15. Everyone really knows these commandments. Have you ever noticed, Matt, it doesn't matter what culture, what country you go to, everybody pretty much recognizes, yeah, adultery, murder, theft, these are not good things.
Yeah, murder.
Even unbelievers who have really no reason to have any kind of moral standards at all. I mean, why should they? They have no outside source of authority, but even they would acknowledge that these things are not good. And so I think that's the point. When it comes to, now we probably need the help of the Holy Spirit because it's really easy for us to understand that other people are sinners. We can clearly see mm-hmm. the evil that is in their hearts. And of course, the trick is that we need to see that's in our hearts as well. So we need the Spirit to convict the world of sin. But as far as understanding, yeah, that's we all should be able to understand that. It's written in the heart. However, what you are going to talk about today is something that is really hard for us to understand. It's something that doesn't really make sense to us because it's not something we would find in our heart. It is something that has to come from outside of us, into our ears, and then into our hearts and changes. And it's interesting that that's the word that is used here when he talks about the Son of Man delivered and being killed and rising. The word for understanding there means something that, yeah, you probably couldn't understand. That wouldn't be something you would know naturally. In fact, it has almost has a nuance of innocence to it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we'd say ignorance of the law is no excuse, but I think we do think it's an excuse. If you didn't know it was wrong, if you didn't know it was, and that's the sense of the word understanding here. So now, Matt, tell us a story that tells us something that we would not understand on our own if we weren't given to us by the word of God.
Good. Well, thanks,
John. Was that a
good
intro for you?
Did I do a good lead job? In. Yeah, look at that. Okay. You really set that up. Very nice. Our listeners are thinking, I'm glad I tuned in this week. yes. So here is someone that is would be considered defiled, right? So yes. By the disciples, by the Pharisees, it's someone that, yeah, is unclean. Yeah, it was unclean. But she has this interaction with Jesus, and we see what Jesus thinks about her and what Jesus does for her. So we want to look at that. The other thing I want to look at is in the lectionary reading, it pairs together this account with a second account. All right. So there's these two accounts. They're both healings. And if we have time, we'll read both of them and be thinking about what they have in common with each other. What might they have in common with each other? I think there's probably another number of things in common, but what are those things? So let's go ahead and read that first account. So, John, if you want to go ahead and read verses 24 through 30.
And from there, Jesus arose and went away to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered a house and did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. But immediately a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, let the children be fed first, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. But she answered him, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. And he said to her, for this statement you may go your way, the demon has left your daughter. And she went home and found the child lying in bed and the demon gone.
Yeah. So, John, if you want to, since you already covered the defiling stuff, you know, how does do you want to make that connection for us from last week's text and how you see that here in this woman?
Sure. Well, the thing is, and Mark really belabors it, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not enough to say she's a Syrophoenician woman, but she's a Gentile. And the problem is, first of all, the word there, I don't know why they translated a Gentile there, Matt. I really don't. Because that's not the usual word. Ethnos is usually the word that we get for Gentile. It means somebody that's not a Jew. Mm-hmm. She is particularly called a Hellenist. So she's a Greek. That's what she is. But you see, here's the thing. Matt, you're a Christian, aren't you?
Yes, you bet.
You're a Lutheran.
That's why I'm here.
That you're a Christian, too. So yes. what's the fundamental teaching that we Jewish people and even Muslims agree on? What's the fundamental teaching about God we all agree on?
So monotheistic, for one, right? You know, one God.
Yeah. Greeks, they don't believe that. They don't even have the fundamental right? They think there's all kinds of gods. I think I was reading, they've got like a dozen different gods. Mm-hmm. So this guy doesn't even have the fundamentals of what God is like. And now the other problem is, of course, she's a Syrophoenician. And if you know your history, she shouldn't even be there. Because the Syrophoenicians were so evil, so wicked, so corrupt, that God, here's the technical term, devoted them to destruction, which simply means God commanded the Israelites to kill every man, woman, and child. That's how despicable these people were. They just needed to be wiped off the face of the earth. And yet here she is, because, of course, the Israelites never did what God told them to do. They always knew better than God. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. There you go. Why even bother with her?
Yeah. And yet Jesus, as we see, another word we keep bringing up, John, is compassion. Has compassion on her. Has compassion on her daughter, too.
Well, does he, man? It doesn't sound like compassion to me.
Well, he calls her a dog as well. Yeah. That doesn't sound so good. And yeah, fair enough, John. But in the end, right, that response, even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the table, right? Which, you know, wow. That's, for this statement, Jesus is pretty impressed by that. For this statement, you may go your way. The demon has left your daughter. You know, he has compassion on this woman and her daughter and heals. You know, because, like, you know, the Jews probably would have not even talked to this woman. But yet Jesus in the end does.
Yeah. And in fact, in Matthew's account, that's how it begins, that Jesus just ignores her. And the disciples, of course, aren't troubled by that at all. In fact, they finally just get fed up and say, well, just send her away.
She deserves to be ignored. But
you're not helping me because he calls her a dog. That still doesn't seem nice. What's going on? I mean, okay, it's fine that he healed her demon-possessed daughter, but still, tell me more, Pastor Clark. What's going on here?
Well, I think it's Jesus is using this too as a teaching opportunity, I would say.
Okay.
You know, because here... here he's surrounded by, he's an entire inside at this point, which I believe is kind of Gentile territory, right? But he's using this as a teaching moment as well. You know, he had just proclaimed all foods clean. And here, in a concrete way, he's showing, I'm going to have compassion even on the Syrophoenicians, even the Gentiles, even the Greeks. You know, I've come for them too.
So wait a second. Hold on, man. You just made the light bulb go off my head. So it's not only that all foods are clean,
but maybe
all people are clean too.
Yeah, in that, yes. They're not to be avoided, right? They're not they're sinless clean, right? But they're not to be avoided. That as Jesus will say, right, in his Great Commission to make disciples of all nations, including Syrophoenician women who are Greek, all people. And he shows this, begins to teach here in this healing. So I think part of the interchange and calling her a dog and then her response, eating the crumbs from the table, I think part of it at least is a teaching moment for Jesus, not just for this woman, but for all those who are observing what's going on here too.
So I really like that, Matt. So it's not that none of us are clean. We already established what comes out of the heart, which is evil thoughts and foolishness. But on the other hand, from God's perspective, that doesn't mean that we don't deal with this. No, those are things that we still should be concerned and have compassion for. So do you know the unique thing about the word dog here, Matt?
Yeah, I think, well, it's kind of a street, right? There's a couple words I think used for dog here, right?
Yeah.
Jesus uses a word and the woman uses a word, right? If I remember right.
Yeah. Well, see, there are the dogs, like in Revelation 22:15, outside are the dogs and sorcerers and the sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and everyone who loves and practices falsehood. Right. So there's those kind of, you don't want to be dog.
That's bad.
That's for sure. And there are, in Matthew 7, there are the dogs, and you don't want to give them that's holy because they'll trample it underfoot and they'll turn to attack you. But see, what's really cool about this word, that's not the word that he uses. This is the word for the little pet dog, the lap dog. See, the dog that is underneath the table, not the feral, you know, barking dingo dogs that'll eat your lamb. But the little pet dog, and she grabs it. Isn't that neat how she seizes that and says, well, okay, so I'm a dog, but give me a crumb.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. How it, you know, when you really know, see, that's the problem. When you really come to understand what is in your heart, and then any little thing of God's grace, you say, wow, that's tremendous. Give me that. In fact, it's also cool. I did not notice this until this year, Matt. The word she uses for crumb is also in the diminutive. So the dog word is in the diminutive. So it's not the big dog, it's the little dog. But the word for crumb means the littlest crumb. And I got to thinking, yeah, when I'm really desperate, I'll take anything. Just give me the littlest thing, anything. I'll take even this. So anyway, I just, well,
I think, you know, what if we're let's see if we can get to the second account or not. But, you know, what if Jesus would have said the same thing to one of these Jewish scribes, and called them a dog, they probably would have just stormed out, right? But yet this woman, this Gentile, she doesn't. Instead, she recognizes that. She doesn't deny it. She doesn't say, I'm not a dog. But she says, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the children's table. So she recognizes her. She recognizes her unworthiness, before Jesus. And it comes in humility.
So you wanted to connect it to the second story. So where does it connect to the second story?
Well, let's read the second story. And it's, again, another healing. And this time it's a man who is deaf and probably mute too. So if you could read verses 31 through 37.
Then Jesus returned from the region of Tyre and went through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. And they brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment. And they begged him to lay his hand on him. And taking him aside from the crowd privately, he put his fingers into his ears, and after spitting, touched his tongue. And looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, Ephratha, that is, be opened. And his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. And Jesus charged them to tell no one, but the more he charged them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, he has done all things well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak.
Oh, another wonderful account. And I mean, we could spend a couple episodes on this account alone, right? But, you know, having just, you know, read both of these accounts back to back, John, any commonalities, any connections you see between the two? Again, the lectionary includes both in the readings for the same day. And I'm thinking, well, surely there's got to be some kind of connection that they would have two distinct accounts put together.
I, to be honest with you, I think they just did that, Matt, because they ran out of Sundays. You know,
that could be too. Maybe it's very pragmatic.
but if we want to find a connection, my first thought would be, I'm sure that again the disciples would have thought this man was unclean. He was defiled because, after all, if you have these kind of things, if you're deaf, that's who
sinned.
Someone
did something wrong, right?
Yeah, who sinned? Yeah, him or his parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so kind of two unclean people, right? To be avoided. Yeah, the deaf guy, he got what was coming to him. Yeah. And this woman, well, she's a who cares? You know, she's not even one of us. She's a Gentile. Yeah, good.
Other than that, what are there other connections you see?
Well, so here's the connections I came up with. I mean, the first one is pretty obvious, right? Both accounts, someone is healed. Okay. Yeah. So they're both healings.
Yeah.
You know, that might be obvious, but one is a girl is, you know, a demon possessed and cast out. And the other one, the man's hearing is restored. Both accounts, I think we see the power of God's word. You know, in the first account, Jesus says that the girl is healed, and guess what? Yeah, she's healed. The second account, Jesus says the word Ephphatha, and his ears are open. So the power of the word. Both accounts, I think, are just show that Jesus is the fulfillment of the Old Testament promises of a Messiah, you know, one that is going to bring about healing. And here, here he heals, because the Old Testament reading this is paired with is just that account from Isaiah, if I remember right, where it's talking about the ears of the deaf being open and all those things. Like, here he is. Yeah, Jesus is the man. He is the Messiah.
If I could just interrupt you for a second, Matt, and now I'm glad you brought that up, because I hadn't thought about it. So that really would have been striking, because I'm sure when those people heard the words of Isaiah, they thought he was only speaking about good Jewish people. Mm-hmm. They would never have thought he might have been speaking about people from Tyre and Sidon, and they certainly wouldn't think he was talking about people that were born in sin.
You bet. So, surely the Messiah is just going to open the ears of the good Jewish people, right?
Yeah.
The clean people. No, Jesus. So no, he's come in fulfillment of that. But guess what? He's a Messiah. He's the Christ for all people, for all people. Yeah. What a blessing. But the what I wanted to pick up on, the commonality I wanted to touch on a little bit, is in both accounts, someone is begging. Someone's begging. And I kind of like that. So in the first account, this word beg comes up, and I think it's two different Greek words, John. I looked it up, but in the English, at least, it's beg in both accounts. Verse 26, and she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter, right?
Oh, wow.
And then you have, in the next account, you have these individuals. We don't know who they are, if they're friends, family, whoever, but they've brought this deaf man to Jesus. And they beg Jesus to do something for him, right? They beg Jesus, verse 32, to lay his hand on him. So in both accounts, there's someone begging on behalf of someone else. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because we don't always see that in Jesus' miracles. But in these two accounts, we do.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we got to make it clear that Jesus just heals people because he's a God of compassion. So you're right. We do have stories where Jesus, well, like that blind guy, there's that man born blind. He just comes up and heals him. No one's begging him. The man doesn't even know who Jesus is.
Yeah,
but
so
what's the significance of this for us, that in both these cases, they are begging? In fact, I just noticed the woman actually falls down at his feet, which is also a very humble kind of position.
Yeah, you bet. So yeah, begging, I think, you know, if we want to use other words, we could use interceding, you know, speaking up for someone else, advocating for someone else. So that got me thinking, you know, is it just isolated to these two accounts? And no. So especially in the book of Mark, you go back to chapter 2, and you have four men who are kind of interceding for a friend who's paralyzed as they lower him through the roof, right, to be healed. You go to chapter 5, and you have Jairus. He's interceding on behalf of his daughter, his little 12-year-old daughter is near death. So you have these other examples, too, of someone sort of begging, interceding, speaking up on behalf of someone else.
I'm wondering, Matt, you said there were two different words there. I wonder, maybe that's the thing. You use one word if it's you directly begging, and you use another word if you are interceding for someone else.
Yeah.
But I did not realize that there's a lot of stuff in Mark that comes up over and over again. Like, understand, we talk about. But so begging is too. Okay, good.
So, which I think is kind of cool, you know. And even if it's not the exact word used there, it's still, a very similar concept. It's coming to Jesus on behalf of someone else. It got me thinking about us too, you know, how we are called to do the same, to intercede on behalf of others, to speak up on behalf of others, you know, maybe even beg on behalf of others. You know, places like Proverbs 31, it talks about speaking up for those who cannot speak for themselves. You know, this idea that, there's a place to advocate for others. And maybe even in our world today, to speak up on behalf of others. We think of, you know, we think of things like the unborn, for instance, but we also think of perhaps those who are in need. We think of maybe the refugee among us to speak up, you know, on their behalf. Sometimes they don't know how to even speak up for themselves or who to speak to, right? So to intercede, to beg, to speak up for those who are in need. I think there's a place for that. The place where we probably most often do that, though, is in our prayers, right?
Yes.
Where we really do speak up, intercede, maybe even beg on behalf of others in our prayers. Just like this mom brings her, you know, talks about the need of her daughter's healing. These individuals bring this deaf man to Jesus. In our prayers, we bring others before Jesus too. And, you know, in our prayers, they're not just for ourselves, right? So often my prayers are probably, you know, focused on me, what I need, what I want,
I think
is best.
I would acknowledge that, yeah.
But instead to pray for others, on behalf of others. Boy, you know, that's, we're admonished to do that all over in Scripture, right? You know, Paul writes to Timothy, I urge that petitions and prayers and intercessions and thanksgiving be made for all people, not just for yourself, but for all people. And then he goes on to say about especially those who are in authority. So yeah, this, I think we can, you know, pick up on this theme of interceding. But, you know, the gospel in all this is that we have someone who intercedes for us, right?
Yeah.
We have a Savior who intercedes for us. That, you know, I think of Jesus' high priestly prayer in John's gospel, where he's crying out even on our behalf, you know, that we would be kept in the truth and kept from evil. And I think of the greatest intercession of all is from the cross, right? You know, Father, forgive them, you know, for they know not what they do. Interceding for those who nailed him to the cross, but even interceding for us whose sins he's dying for on the cross. Father, forgive them. But, you know, what I think I forget, John, is that Jesus continues to intercede for us even today.
Yeah.
Even today in the Father's presence, Jesus intercedes for us. He's our great high priest in that way, begs, intercedes for us. There's a hymn by Charles Wesley that didn't make it into our hymnal, but is good nonetheless. But just the one stanza talks about his wounds, and it says, five bleeding wounds he bears, received on Calvary. They pour effectual prayers. They strongly plead for me. Forgive him, oh, forgive, they cry, nor let that ransomed sinner die. You know, Jesus' wounds interceding for us before the Father, a reminder of his sacrifice on our behalf, that we would be forgiven. And for Jesus' sake, we are. So, yeah, I get lots of commonalities in those two accounts, John. But I think, you know, begging, interceding is one of them. And how, yeah, we're called to intercede on behalf of others, too. And then the gospel message that Jesus intercedes for us on the cross, but even still today in his Father's presence.
And you know what I think is neat about Matt is that is precisely then why we can intercede for others.
Yep.
Because why would God listen to us? But yeah, he does. Jesus has died for us. He intercedes for us. So, well, then why wouldn't we be interceding for other people? Even the people, by the way, that we might think don't really deserve it.
Yeah.
They need God's love. Maybe especially they need God's love because he doesn't deserve it. I have a proposal. There is yet a third story where someone intercedes in the Gospel of Mark. Let's do that next week. Is that okay?
Sounds like a plan, John.
All right. Blessings. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.